This is Mythical.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A perfect blend of flour, eggs, and sugar peppered with molten morsels of chocolatey goodness. Who hasn't enjoyed their fair share of chocolate chip cookies? But is it the greatest cookie flavor of all time? This is a hot dog as a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What? Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
And today we are joined by our baking buddy and fellow Mythical Kitcheneer, Trevor Everts.
Hi, guys. It's so good to be here.
I'm so glad you're here.
Trevor, you're glowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't stop smiling. I'm so excited.
Well, Trevor, one of the reasons we wanted to have you here is because, most of the time we record this, we just have to, like, lock you outside because we need it quiet, and sometimes we can hear you faintly scratching at the walls. And so we didn't want that to happen today. But two, I love when people get into arguments where they have actual skin in the game, right? Like, real experts. And you are a baker. You have a literal degree in baking, do you not?
I do. I do have a degree.
Can you produce your diploma?
Not at this point in
time.
Yeah,
you don't have to do it right now. We'll do it later.
We'll check it. I've never particularly lied on a job application, but I have stretched truths.
Yeah, sure. Who hasn't?
Anyways, the point is, I'm a cookie fan, but I'm not like a huge cookie baker. I bake cookies. I bake cookies and dropped them off at Trevor's house once early in quarantine.
That's so nice of you. Where are my cookies, dog?
Live closer to me, dog.
I know, I'm sorry. I live all the way in Century City. It's hard, I understand. The commute isn't.
When we were talking about does pineapple belong on pizza, I made the claim that if an Italian man or woman who was particularly passionate about the idea yelled at me that pineapple does not belong on a pizza, I would agree with them. I do not believe that chocolate chip cookies are the best cookie flavor. They fall outside of my top five. They're not a thing. Yeah,
what?
Oh, shocked.
Wait,
faces
no,
around.
No, no, no.
Oh, big claim. No. Controversy strikes.
That's crazy. Yeah. It's for sure top three. It's not my number one, though.
This is what I need. I need people who are passionate about the idea of baking to yell at me like that fictional Italian man or woman.
I think since Trevor's our guest, I think I want to know what his favorite cookie is.
Okay. Well, my favorite cookie of all time is chocolate chip.
Okay.
And here's my opinion on it. Mm-hmm. I believe that in a general food scope, there are objectively good flavors and objectively bad flavors. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't see people just taking spoonfuls of malic acid, right?
Right.
And I think that when it comes to cookies, objectively, chocolate chip is a top three cookie of all time. I think that you can't name three cookies that are better than chocolate chip and have a genuine argument for that. Now, where it falls in the top three, that's where I give leeway and say, okay, if you mm-hmm. want it to be number three or number two, I get that. You can make an argument for that. There's subjectivity to that. But for me, chocolate chip is number one.
I like this idea of objectivity in food
sure.
and kind of exploring that.
Yeah, me
so I'm
too.
Open to that. That's something that like we've talked about before, like whether or not certain flavors actually work. Like the pineapple on pizza thing is a perfect
sure.
example where people
yeah,
are talking
exactly.
about sweet and savory and all that. But it's like, yo, would you put kiwi on a pizza? Would you put raspberries? Are you saying that any sweet and acidic thing works? Like, nah, that clashes.
Yeah.
You know? But also, man, there are other objectively good cookie combinations. Like my favorite cookie is a ginger molasses cookie. I have burnt my taste buds off. And there are people that, you know, they still smoke cigarettes out there and they do bad things to their palates, you know? So there's people that they need that big spice punch. They need to go chase that wave. They need to find their Point Break.
Wow.
Sorry, I don't know why I brought up Point Break. And for me, like the molasses ginger cookie is the perfect cookie because you get all that chewiness and all that sweetness that's offset by a huge punch of spice. For me, chocolate chip cookies, they are comforting, sure, but they are cloying and one-dimensional.
Cloying?
Cloying, I say.
You mean to tell me molasses isn't cloying?
No, molasses is deep and dark and funky.
And cloying.
Yeah, it cloys a little bit. Okay. Is that like a 1 out of 4 on the cloy scale?
Okay, I agree with you, Trevor, that chocolate chip is top three. I don't think it's top one. Also, molasses, ginger molasses, I don't even think about that, man. That stuff is like in left field.
Top 8 for me.
That's what I bake for Trevor. Were they good? You never gave me, they were flat. They're too flat. I don't know what happened.
Well, I reheated some of the chocolate chip ones, like in the microwave. I actually ate them. My roommate, he ate a lot of them.
That's
like
good.
I would go. I kind of left them in the kitchen.
I'm, I bake for the people.
Anything.
I don't need Trevor's elitist palate over here. I'm baking for the Atons of the world.
but Nicole, you were saying.
Oh yeah, my favorite cookie is a good old fashioned snickerdoodle.
Yes.
You know, it's just okay. Texturally perfect. You want to know why? For people that don't know, snickerdoodle cookies are typically made with cream of tartar in place of baking soda or baking powder. And
Trevor, can you confirm?
I can confirm, yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the thing I didn't know. Maybe I'm just ignorant.
They're made with cream of tartar, which gives us this beautiful chew and beautiful texture and beautiful rise. And then also the cinnamon sugar is so simple and so good. And the way that it kind of candies on the outside, it's just incomparable to any other cookie I've ever had. So both of you can suck it.
I will not suck it. I will not suck it. I feel like the snickerdoodle is just a lightweight equivalent. You and I are on the same... You and I was going to say a lightweight equivalent of my favorite cookie. They both got spice. They both got warm spice. They both don't have that contrast of the melting chocolate because I love the texture of cookies. Cookies are my favorite confection, you know? But like you said, Snickerdoodle is your favorite. There's no melted chocolate in that.
There doesn't need to be chocolate in
it. I agree.
But I think a cookie with chocolate, the way Trevor defines it, is definitely top three. I don't know what my last cookie would be, though, truly. Sprinkles? No. Sugar cookies. Oh my god, sometimes, okay, so I love sugar cookies because I make them from scratch, and sometimes I bring them to my friends, but my friends are really health conscious, so like, you know, I cut out really cute shapes for like holidays, like for Valentine's Day, I made like a bunch of them with like cute little sayings like, dump him, and like, whatever, like, you know, the conversation hearts, and then...
They're so dismissive. They're not like, I love you, just like, dump
no,
him,
they
girl.
No, they were like bitchy ones, and I did that on purpose, but like, I try to do them for like holidays, like I make like Christmas tree ones, I make like star ones, and nobody likes my sugar cookies. And they're yummy sugar cookies. They're just so health conscious about it. It makes me sad, but I think sugar cookies are top three.
Yeah.
So it's in no particular order, except my order. Snickerdoodle, chocolate chip, sugar.
My order is chocolate chip, snickerdoodle, sugar. Oh, that's my top
high
three.
Five.
High five. He's nice.
I don't want to say mine anymore. I go chewy ginger molasses cookie number one.
Okay.
I go alfajores number two. I love me. We were talking about alfajores in Argentina.
I just talked about it like 15 seconds ago.
Really?
I was sitting here and I'm like, I want to make Argentinian style desserts.
Yeah.
Alfajores.
I love alfajores. They have them at, they're like a sandwich cookie. They're kind of like half shortbread. There's typically like some dulce de leche in between. I love sandwich cookies. I love oatmeal raisin cream pies. I love taking that and sandwiching. What? Oh, don't laugh at cream pie. Don't laugh at family show.
I'm laughing at oatmeal raisin, you grandpa.
Oatmeal raisin in your top three.
What?
If oatmeal raisin is in your top three, I immediately don't trust your cookie opinion.
Okay, no. Okay. So here's where I'm coming from. I like the chewy. I like the chewy. You guys know I have soft teeth. Shout out to Bird's Eye Dentistry in Hollywood. I'm hoping that you give me, because I was there getting a tooth fixed because it broke eating a Whopper. I was slopping on a Whopper.
Slopping on the Whopper.
He thought there was a bone in his Whopper.
It was a tooth. I just shattered a tooth on a Whopper.
Oh my
Who knows?
Gosh.
But anyways, cookies, the chewiness of cookies is the most chewy, pleasant sensation that I can experience as a soft-toothed man.
No
so that's
taffy?
What I'm after. I don't need no taffy. Oh, God, no. Trevor, literally, we're in the kitchen making some caramel stuff, and he offered me, like, a little nub of caramel, and I stepped back like he had a weapon. I'm like, no, can't do it. That's money out of my pocket. Every time it happens, it's just like $1,000. Anyways, I'm hoping that by giving Bird's Eye Dentistry, that's Bird's Eye Dentistry on Vine in Hollywood, I can get some sort of free dental care. Again, this podcast is not brought to you by Bird's Eye Dentistry. Hopefully, one day, it will be. I'm trading clout for crowns. But anyways, I love that chewy texture of cookies. To me, that is like the utility of a cookie over other pastry, right? Cake, you get that sumptuous tenderness. Mm-hmm. Pie, you get, you know, the flaky buttery contrasted with the filling. For me, cookie should be pure chew and deliciousness. And the chocolate chip, for me, is just something that takes away from that. Like, my biggest pet peeve, I don't dislike chocolate chip cookies. I'm not a monster here, okay?
Okay.
Like, I'm not saying that they're bad. But when you get a cookie that has so many chocolate chips in it that you physically don't get the chew of the actual cookie dough, to me, that is just like mind-blowing. Like, you took the one utility of the cookie and you ruined it by putting these just store-bought chocolate chips in there.
Well, Josh, there's a problem.
I think that I could bring you a cookie that would change your mind.
Because
I think
I
you
want
can
my mind
too.
To be changed.
I think you can too, Trevor.
It's like, here's the thing about chocolate chip cookies for me. Like, a lot of the cookies that you've named, like a molasses cookie for me, there's a certain, like, flavor ceiling that it has. Like, it can only get so good. But chocolate chip cookies, for me, there are so many levels that you mm-hmm. can go to increase how good they
True.
Are and the way that you make them. And when I worked at Dominique Ansel Bakery, I made chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, name dropping out here.
Yeah. Because I'm saying, I think that if I brought you a cookie from there, it would blow your mind. Like, it's the best chocolate chip cookie. It's the best chocolate chip cookie that I've ever had. And it is so perfectly chewy. And yet, like, a little bit of crisp on the outside, you get them just nice and golden brown. Yeah. It's so chewy.
Stop it.
It's so good. The chocolate chips, we use, like, thin wafer chips. So it's not, like, chunky mm-hmm. chips. We use thin wafer chips. So it doesn't feel like you're getting that, like, you're not biting into a big chunk of chocolate. But it just molds with the cookie. It's really good.
I feel like this kind of brings us back to the fries onion rings debate.
Kind of.
Where we talked about how I prefer fries because there is a higher floor on French fries mm-hmm. opposed to onion rings, but onion rings give you more of an opportunity to actually let craft kind of shine through it.
Sure.
Because there's so many more steps to it. I feel like that's probably the thing with chocolate chip cookies, right? Because you have like so many more kind of steps in there. You're playing with the ratios, you're playing with the kind of chocolate.
Sure.
And chocolate itself has such a wide range of like good versus crappy chocolate.
Yeah.
I'm also the person that, during a quarantine video, I mashed breadcrumbs together were keto chocolate chips. That's all I could find at the grocery store at the time, Ugh. Were these, like, gross oil keto chips,
Ew.
And mashed it together and called it a cookie. So that's why I do appreciate Trevor's perspective as an expert, because I'm a garbage person.
Yeah, and to follow up on what Trevor was saying, have you ever had a really, you know, like Tate's Bakery, those really thin, wafery chocolate
Yeah, but they're crispy, though.
But they're delicious. That's the thing about chocolate chip cookies. Like, chocolate chip cookies can take on any shape, form that you want. You can have a really soft, chewy one. You can have a really crispy, snappy, cookie-like one. There's so many different iterations of a chocolate chip cookie that are delicious. But I can't really say that about our cookies. Like, Snickerdoodle is a Snickerdoodle.
Bro,
is a
Ginger
Snickerdoodle.
Snaps?
That was a great, have you ever seen the movie Ginger Snaps?
No, what's it about?
Oh my god, it's about this
Can you describe the plot over the next 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's this movie where it's two sisters and one of them gets bitten by a werewolf, I think, and then her name is Ginger, so it's Ginger Snaps, like she snaps, get it?
No, that's Twilight.
No.
Yeah, no, there's Twilight. A werewolf. The werewolf imprints on, what's Renesmee. Taylor Lautner.
Renesmee.
Yeah.
Taylor
Lautner, he's got these sexy.
Her name is Renesmee.
He's
still
a nice
teen.
Chest.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, he was like a karate champion?
Wait, really?
Taylor Lautner, there are awesome videos of him at 13 just doing like 360 spin kicks, breaking boards.
Yeah, he was lava boards. Boy. I mean, Shark Girl?
Shark Boy.
He was Shark Boy.
A great role in Cheaper by the Dozen 2. One of the most underrated film franchises in there. Daddy Daycare and Cheaper by the Dozen 2. Two fantastic movies. And so what I'm saying is, I think populism might come into play in this. Because I'm someone who spouts that argument all the time. Where I'm like, look, if society has told you something is the best, there is some truth to that. There is some sort of truth in numbers. People obviously love chocolate chip cookies. They're outselling. No, I can't go to the store, Trevor, and find a Chips Ahoy brand molasses ginger chew, even though I sure would love to. So I think there's something to this kind of like comfort thing. But then again, is that only a chicken or egg situation, which as we've discussed on the podcast, chicken
Doesn't
definitely
matter.
Came first.
Doesn't matter.
Is that a chicken or egg situation where like chocolate chip cookies are associated with comfort in America because they've been marketed to us so hard?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there a greater cookie future that we could have if, say, Snickerdoodles were the dominant cookie? What is it about chocolate chips specifically that associates it like Proust's Madeleine to so many Americans?
Toll House.
Toll House.
It's the Toll House.
The Toll House monopoly.
Exactly.
The Toll House industrial complex needs to be toppled.
Exactly.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
1938. the invention of the chocolate chip cookie at the Toll House.
Is that when it happened?
Yeah, yeah. It was 1938. There's actually some legend surrounding it because a lot of people, a lot of people say that like she accidentally did it where she added these like chocolate chunks to cookie dough.
Bull spit.
Thinking that they would melt and make chocolate cookies. And then they came out. It's like, oh, it didn't melt. Now we have chocolate chunks in our cookie. But then she was like, no, I meant to do it. Like I put chocolate chunks in there on purpose.
That's me 24/7 at this job. Yeah. I meant to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that on purpose.
Why is every food origin story just like someone messed up? There's like, ah, fudge, I dropped the sandwich in the broth and now it's a French dip. A slice of potato's too thin.
Because it's
endearing.
Now it's a chip.
Wait till you hear the story of the origin of the croissant. I wrote an essay on this in culinary
Trevor,
school.
I'm so fascinated by what people did in culinary school because I never went. A lot of people seem to think that I have. But I dropped out of an international relations political science major at UCLA. Shout out to the public school system for letting me fail. That was fun. But Trevor, I want to hear about your academic experience in culinary school, writing about the croissant.
You want to hear about my academic experience?
Well, no, I more just want to hear about the origin
of the
croissant.
Okay.
Did you have to like, take math?
Did I have to take
math? What's 9 times 7?
9 times 7?
35.
No, that is not it.
60?
It is 63.
Yeah, 63.
That's way too long.
Cole threw me off.
I'm sorry, guys. Culinary school did not set me up for success. It didn't.
I didn't have to do math, no. I mean, I had to do a little bit, like just adding grams and stuff, but I wasn't like taking math tests in culinary school.
Wait, so what's the origin of the croissant, though? I'm curious now.
It's been a minute. I would have to go look at the essay to give you some of the finer details, but essentially, the story goes that it actually originated in Vienna. And there was an army attacking this Viennese city, and there was a baker. And the army that was attacking this Viennese city, like or this Austrian city, they tunneled underground to get through the wall of the city. And they tunneled underground really early in the morning. And the only way that the city knew that they were attacking was because the local town baker was there baking his pastries and he heard them tunneling underground, which allowed the city to rout the soldiers. And so in honor of this baker, and then like there was some like crest, like moon symbol, like for the town. And so he made this pastry to commemorate their defense of the city. And then there's also another legend, because obviously the French claim that it's their, like, national pastry. Yeah. There's another French legend. There's a lot of controversy surrounding who actually created this croissant. There's something about a French legend where this French, like, princess had a baker, like, specifically bake her own, like, new type of pastry. And then he came up with the croissant, and then it became, like, all the rage. So there's a lot of different stories. But my favorite is the story of, like, the Austrian city that defended their walls and made an honorary pastry for it.
Why are there so many, like, weird nationalism stories that are tied into food myths?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole, like, Italian unification thing where they're like, we put the green of the basil and the white of the cheese and the red of the sauce to represent the colors of Italy. And then, like, actual historians like, people have been making that pizza for 100 years. There's poor Italian fishermen making the same damn pizza. Like, this wasn't no invention.
Yeah, but like, food is like art in that sense, you know? Like, people just give it like some sort of lore.
Yeah, like you apply meaning to it. Like, apple pie in America.
Exactly. Yeah. We gotta apply meaning to it.
Even though apple pie is French. Man, the French keep getting screwed on this. You got Vienna trying to steal the croissant.
Actually, laminated doughs have been around for a long time.
It's literally called viennoiserie, right?
Yeah. So the French didn't laminated dough has been around forever, and then it sort of got popularized by the French, so that's why they kind of claim it as their own. But laminated is it was Dutch immigrants to Vienna originally that brought laminated dough to Austria. So it didn't even actually originate in Austria. There was a Dutch worker strike in bakeries because bakeries weren't paying their workers. So they said, well, we'll just go across the border and bake our pastries there and get paid. And that's how the laminated dough got brought to Austria. And then these Austrian people were like, oh, this is dope. Like, we'll use this.
This is dope.
That's
Dutch,
awesome.
Bro. That's how the donut was invented by Dutch Jews on a ship.
Nice.
I go full on like my Big Fat Greek Wedding when it comes to like Jews inventing food. Because I am fully convinced that like Jews invented tempura.
Yeah, we made fried chicken.
Yeah, Jews invented fried chicken. It was a way to preserve food. This is not verifiable at all.
I'm verifying.
I read it on like one Jewish blog that was called like whyjewsinventedallfood.com or something. But I am fully convinced that it was Portuguese Jewish explorers who brought tempura to Japan.
Okay.
Fully convinced.
Chocolate chip cookies. Good.
Is that what we were talking
have
about?
Have you ever had
like chocolate chip cookies as an American symbol over other things? Like, is that stuff like tied into this Toll House myth of like this, I don't know, it was like a rags to riches story that everyone could believe in? Because this is, chocolate chip cookies are a monopoly. That's the thing I don't like.
No, Monopoly's a board game.
What?
What?
Do you know the Monopoly guy doesn't have a monocle?
What?
That's one of the Mandela effects.
Isn't he winking? He's winking, though.
I think so, but I assume he was winking with a monocle.
But he doesn't have a monocle. Here's the thing about the chocolate chip cookie for me. I think that it has a sort of like desert island factor to it, where like there are a lot of cookies that I really like, but I only want to eat them like one time or be like, oh, that was a good cookie. But I wouldn't, if I was stuck on a desert island with one cookie to eat for the rest of my life, it's going to be a chocolate chip cookie, right?
Snickerdoodle for me.
Because it's just so, it's so repeatable. Like I can eat chocolate chip cookies over and over again and not get tired of them.
Oh.
I'm that way with cinnamon sugar cookies. I mean, there's nothing, I could eat that. I could eat like 15 of them, no problem.
This is maybe shifting the conversation a little bit in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Because when I think of the best meals that I've ever eaten, mm-hmm. none of them are ones that I would particularly want to eat all the time.
Sure.
You know what I mean? There are certain foods like that. Shout out to like, you know, Burritos La Palma. Like I could eat their chicharron burrito every single day for the rest of my life. But there are all these like, you know, big meals filled with like huge pungent flavors that I really love, you know, thinking about food at like Night Market Song,
yeah.
stuff like that. But I don't know if it's stuff that I would want to like completely eat all the time, similar to the way that like this molasses ginger cookie that I absolutely love. I love the robustness of the spices cutting through all that sugar. But desert island, I mean, it's hot on that desert island. Am I going to want to eat spicy cookies all day?
I mean, the robustness would just make you want to chop your beard off.
It's so robust. That's adorable that you think I can grow a beard.
I tried.
I feel like on a desert island, you would have like a Tom, what's his name? Tom Hanks?
Casey Affleck.
Tom Hanks.
Casey Affleck.
Matt Damon. Beard.
No, the guy, Castaway,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, you like these apples?
Castaway.
Matt
How about
Damon.
Eating?
Matt Damon was
at
not a Castaway.
At the end of Martian.
Oh my God, I didn't watch Martian.
How about eating these apples? That's what Matt Damon says.
And, when he makes poop apples?
Yeah, when he makes poop apples.
You've talked about why did we talk about poop? Okay.
What I'm saying is, I would absolutely, if I was on a desert island and I had to pick one cookie or even like one confection to eat, it wouldn't be my favorite cookie. The one that I think tastes objectively the best, because it's something that I wouldn't want to eat all the time. But how much value does that actually have?
I mean,
it need to be something you want to eat all the time?
I think you just have to define what number one means to you.
Yeah.
Like, what does number one mean? Like, the best cookie of all time, the goat cookie? Or is it the cookie that you can eat the most of? Like, you know, it's just defining it as that.
Bring
I think the desert island is a great way to look at it.
Bringing up a sports metaphor, it's like, is Michael Jordan the goat or is Bill Russell the goat?
I don't know who Bill Russell is.
No.
You don't know who Bill Russell is? Bill Russell has almost twice the amount of championships as Michael Jordan.
I don't know
But
that.
Just because he has that staying power, just because he was on a good team in an era where there weren't any, you know, incredible players. Are you saying he's the best, Trevor? Are you saying Bill Russell's the GOAT?
No, I'm not saying Bill Russell is the GOAT, because you have to look at, okay, who's the better basketball player? Obviously, Michael Jordan is the better basketball player, but
how is he better?
What about LeBron James?
Is he better statistically?
We should not veer into this type of
discussion.
We'll yell about it back in the kitchen.
I don't know anything about sports.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
One thing, this is more of a philosophical question, because that's where I like to take these things going.
Oh.
Would you rather have, say you, let's imagine a fake serotonin level, right, of just 5. Let's call 5 a baseline serotonin level of happiness. That is your average happiness. Would you rather live a life at all 5 straight across the board or have a sine curve of 10s and zeros? Like, do you think that having this diversity of experience, because your average happiness over the long term is going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But do you value diversity of experience enough to experience the highs and the lows? Or would you rather just be flatlined?
When I'm zero serotonin, how mad am I at life?
Oh my God, you are so mad. You're like, ugh, this caramel is not coming together and I can't figure it out, mad.
And 10 is like
no,
euphoria.
What is it? White chocolate. The white chocolate kept
Oh, frick, yeah. And then 10 is like euphoria.
Yeah. Like, well, you're at Coachella. You're slightly responsibly tipsy.
You know, I think life needs up and downs or else you're flatlining. So I'm going to say 0 to 10.
I agree with that entirely.
That is way, honestly, that is way too black and white of a statement
but
for me.
Black and white cookies. Black and white cookies. Black and white cookies.
Speaking of Jews, black and white cookie. That is one Jewish food invention. Quick tangent. That is one Jewish food invention that I'm always like, we got better things than that.
I've never had it before.
Jews are the first person to put, like, you know, a little strip of icing on two sides of a normal sugar cookie. I love black and white cookies.
I've never had it.
Whenever anyone's like, that is the best, you know, contribution of Jews to society, I'm like, hold on. Like, we got more stuff.
You got Noam Chomsky.
We got more stuff. We got Noam Chomsky. We got Julian Edelman, speaking of But Trevor, do you, back to the question, do you value that diversity of experience over something consistent?
It's really hard for me to answer that question because I disagree with the question, because life will never be lived on either a single average or a high-low only.
Sure, but we're talking about hypotheticals.
Hypothetically.
This whole podcast is hypotheticals.
Hypothetically. I would say that, I'd say I'd probably like, I'd do the average. Like, yeah. I'm content to continue to kind of be at this stage of where, like, I'm good, you know, I'm chilling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it's a total valid argument. Like, there's no right or wrong answer to that. The reason I bring that up in relation to cookies is my whole food philosophy is I always want to chase the best thing possible, knowing that I'm going to eat a lot of crappy things to get there.
Sure.
Like, even when I go to, and I'll do it to my detriment, and I understand that. Like, when I go to a restaurant, if I eat something that I really like, mm-hmm. and then I go to that restaurant again, I'm probably not going to order it.
Yes.
Because of the opportunity cost of, like, well, there's so many other things, and if the chef made that thing taste really good, they can probably make this thing taste really good, and what if that is the best thing I've ever had? And I'm always kind of chasing that high. And so even when it comes to something as simple as cookies, it's like, I know what every chocolate chip cookie I've ever had tastes like. I want to throw some ginger root in there. Throw some molasses. Throw some dark spice. Give me
miso.
Some anise. Give me some miso.
You ever had a miso chocolate chip cookie?
Dude, miso sugar cookie.
Wow.
I don't like miso chocolate, but miso sugar cookie is great.
See, Josh, though, I think you're underestimating the potential and capability of the chocolate chip cookie to blow your mind. Because I think that you haven't had, like, a really amazing knock your socks off chocolate chip cookie. I think you've had very average to maybe above average chocolate chip cookies, and you've been satisfied and content with that to say, okay, it's like, well, whatever cookie to me. I don't think you've had your world rocked by a chocolate chip cookie.
Trevor, rock my world, bro. I want my world to be rocked. Actually, you did make the Dominic Ansel cookies in one of the first weeks that you were here, but you were like just getting used to our oven, which is a thing that anyone who has ever baked anything knows. Like, you have to be familiar with the oven, and it burnt the bottom, and the disappointment in your face.
I was so sad.
Oh, it was crushing for everybody.
We also don't have a convection oven, which makes it really hard to make a perfect
just
chocolate
open
chip
it
cookie.
Up and go. Blow air into it. That's
I don't
a convection.
Think that works.
We gotta make concessions in the mythical kitchen.
Okay.
I had a point that I was gonna make and I completely forgot about it, but I feel like it was a good one. Do you remember what it was?
I'm not in your mind. I know you think I am, but I'm not.
Was it more philosophical
nonsense? Yeah, it totally was. It totally was philosophical nonsense. Oh, this is what it was. When you answer the question, what's your favorite cookie? You're not just saying what cookies you enjoy eating. You are trying to paint an image of yourself. You're trying to tell the world, this is what I want you to think of me based on my favorite cookie. And I think through our little thought experiment, we figured out why. Trevor is someone who values this consistency in his life. He values comfort. Look at him. He's dressed so comfortably.
So comfortably.
So comfortably. And I'm someone who wants to chase these constant highs. That's why when someone asks me my favorite cookie, I'm like, ginger molasses, want to be punched in the face with spice. I don't want the comfort of a chocolate chip cookie because I'm familiar with that. I want to chase the unexpected. And then Nicole's like, I like cinnamon sugar. I'm Nicole.
I think for me, there is something to be said about, like, I love, as a baker, taking those things that seem really simple and don't have a lot of, like, facets and making them as good as I can, whether it's croissants, whether it's cookies, whether it's bread. I love taking those things that just have, like, that small handful of base ingredients and doing the best thing that I can with them. And I think that's why I love a chocolate chip cookie so much, because it's so simple, but you can take those simple ingredients and elevate them to such high levels.
A craftsman.
That was beautiful.
A true craftsman.
What a way to end the podcast.
What a way to end the podcast.
Gorgeous.
I agree. Okay, chocolate chips in my top three. I agree.
Yes!
So many people like it.
Yes!
Trevor's right.
We're going to have a chocolate chip off.
Okay.
We're all going to make chocolate chips.
It's a chip off.
We're going to make a... Isn't that tip off? Basketball?
Yeah, look, Nicole knows cookie. Sports.
Woo!
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Nicole, Trevor, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling around there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
One more time with Trevor. It's time for a segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
Now harmonize. It's time for the segment we call
Opinions Are Like Casseroles.
You're flat, you're dragging.
Why are you looking at me? I'm an alto.
Okay, first. I need to hear Trevor's Sling Blade impression on camera. Trevor, just say, jump folk call it a sling blade, jump folk call it a kaiser blade.
If I can get through without laughing.
Some folks call it a sling blade, I call it a kaiser
blade.
No,
it's got to be more guttural.
Some folks call it a sling blade, others call it a kaiser blade. Some folks call it a kaiser blade.
Sorry.
I like french fry potatoes.
I'm just paraphrasing. Sorry, Billy Bob Thornton.
I reckon my mother didn't exactly mind what Jesse Dickton was doing to her.
He was having his way with her.
Just seen red.
All right, welcome to Opinions Are Like Casseroles. Is that what it's called? Opinions Are Like Casseroles?
That's the name
that
of the segment.
That makes sense.
Yes.
I think I made that up. Maybe Mike did. All right, first up, we got Shameless A. Wong. Most of the time, I use a fork to eat food that's meant to be hand-on. Fries, muffins, wings, drumsticks. Because I don't like getting my fingers or keyboard messy. I love the idea that you're only eating over your computer. Even if I do wash or wipe, is this a valid choice or am I dissing the food? That's actually a very good question.
I don't think you're dissing the food. I think you're still having the same experience. I get it. Like, I'm the same way sometimes. Like, I don't like getting my fingers dirty. But other times, I just, you know, what if there's a lamb chop on the table, I'm reaching in for it. So it depends on the food you're eating. You know, like, if there's, like, a sticky, like, you know, gulab jamun. Is that how you say it?
Oh, love gulab
yeah,
jamun.
Yeah, you can't, like, I can't eat that with my fingers.
Trevor, you ever have gulab jamun?
I haven't, but I will say that I eat like 95% of the food that I eat over my computer, so I 100% agree.
Yeah,
like,
I agree
eat my pizza rolls with a fork, dude.
Yeah.
What? You eat pizza rolls with a fork?
Yeah. Some things you gotta use a fork.
Yeah.
Okay, this is really messed up because I eat almost all my dinners while I'm like playing video games on the couch because I will get home from work and I will heat up my dinner and I'll like let it cool a little bit. I'll play a game of Rocket League. And then I eat the food with my hands, and then I just like wipe it on my couch. I love the tactile
Josh,
experience. It's a crap
dirty.
Couch from Wayfair. There were
have
no children
little,
in it.
Have a little bit of respect for your domicile.
I'm throwing the couch away when I move away from this apartment. It was a totally crap couch. So anyways, I am the complete opposite. I love the tactile experience of eating with your hands, despite the fact that I know I'm ruining a perfectly fine couch. You can clean couches, right? Like you can...
Yeah, you can get
like services.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep wiping marinara on my couch. I don't care.
Marinara.
Literally, I just ate a plate of meatballs with my hands. I used corn tortillas like roti and sabji. Talking
sure.
about Indian food,
mm-hmm.
and I used corn tortillas to scoop up the meatballs. Trevor, you ate those meatballs.
Yeah, they're and, really good.
Yeah, thanks. And then I just ate them in my mouth.
You got a nice couch, I think. I think you're being too harsh on your couch.
Yeah, it's an okay couch. Trevor helped me move into my apartment way back when.
Mr. Ken Pachi. The best snack of my childhood was when my grandma would take plain Cheerios, fry them up in a bit of butter until they turned brown, and salted them. People are usually surprised when I tell them about this. This sounds good. This sounds like like making your own crackers.
That's some grandma food.
This is delicious. The classic
butter salt Cheerios.
Dude, this is actually really good. Like, I would eat this. I would go to, but only if they were honey nut, because I like the contrast, sweet and salty.
That's a delicacy from the American South.
Dude, honestly, this seems like something that would have shown up in one of those like 1950s church cookbooks.
Yeah, for sure. Mormon cookbook.
Yeah. Like, you got like Jell-O salad, funeral potatoes. My Cheerios. My ex's grandma had a, why does all my ex relationships come up in this? Whatever. My ex's grandma, they did like a family cookbook thing, and she had this thing that was called like Crabbies. And it was just like artificial crab mixed with mayonnaise, put it on English muffin, American cheese on top, broiled. And it's delicious. And I was like, that sounds good.
The only way I could add to that, chives.
a little fresh pop off the top.
That's it. Some chives.
Trevor Reed.
Okay. At Mythic Squirrel on Twitter says, baked Lays are the superior chip. I can easily eat 6 baked Lays to 1 regular Lays, hands down, based entirely on enjoyment alone. I have never disagreed with your mind casserole more. One, I have to clarify, are you talking about 6 baked Lay's individual chipped to 1 regular Lay's chipped, or 6 bags? I don't understand the ratio.
Yeah. I'm confused by the ratio. Also, I'm confused by this opinion.
Also, we all have stank faces because we're shocked.
Everyone's physically recoiled from our microphones and computers.
I am disappointed in you, Mythic Squirrel. Baked Lays? What are you, a fascist? That's disgusting, man. Who eats that?
The key to this is based on enjoyment alone. That's the phrase I'm tripped up on. I get it. Like, me and Trevor suck down Diet Cokes like they're glizzies, for Christ's sakes.
Throat-godding
the Diet Cokes.
Like, that's someone, a new one.
If someone, we listen to Cupcake on Spotify.
Okay.
But if someone were to say, like, are you doing that for enjoyment alone? Hell no. Diet Coke tastes better than regular Coke until you drink a regular Coke and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what flavor is. Ditto with baked Lays for me. That said, if you enjoy it, keep on doing what you're doing, but know that you're fully judged over here.
Ew.
Yeah.
At War Manatee 2, great name. I love sweet. Hey, speaking of manatees, did you know that the origin of mermaids?
Stop.
Ugh, fine. At War Manatee 2. Someone's going to let me talk about it one day. I love sweet potatoes in any form. Cook them, mash them, put them in a stew. But the second you put marshmallows on top, it becomes sickly sweet and nightmare side that needs to stay in the 60s. I love sweet potatoes. I don't know if you guys know this, but I was a college athlete. That was D1. I had a partial scholarship, very partial. But I knew so many people that like soured me on sweet potatoes because, you know, Usain Bolt was like, the secret to me being fast is the yams. And so everyone I knew, that was my like toned down Usain Bolt. Every freaking athlete I knew would just like bring a whole sweet potato to practice and just like squeeze it out of its skin into their mouth as they like, you know, drink the muscle milk or whatever. And so I've always been like a little bit soured on sweet potatoes, but I do love them. I also, though, really love just the classic garbage white American Thanksgiving sides.
Yeah.
Like a can of the, what is it, Princess Yams is the brand?
Yes,
with marshmallows broiled on top. I think there's room for both, but I see why you would think it's sickly sweet. It's basically a dessert at that point.
Wait, people are putting marshmallows on top of sweet potatoes?
Oh,
never. I haven't heard about that until now.
Trevor, you're from Idaho.
Yeah, and we're not sickos. That's disgusting.
Okay.
This
you've
is
never heard of this before? I can't believe you've never heard
of this.
No,
this is the first I'm hearing
of it. Does it sound good to you?
No, I'm horrified.
This
I don't really
like
sweet
Americana.
Potatoes, to be honest, though.
I never grew up eating marshmallows on top of anything in my house. So this, whenever I found out that this existed, I went ham. Like, every single time I would be invited to, like, a Friendsgiving or anything, I would make a sweet potato casserole where I would just take a bunch of sweet potatoes and mash them with brown sugar and, like, salt and butter.
Yeah.
And then I would make my own marshmallow topping.
Yeah.
And then for dramatics, in front of the whole entire Friendsgiving, I would turn on a blowtorch and just go, and then I was, like, the talk of the town. So I think they're it's disgusting, but it's deliciously disgusting.
I like how we talk about how you and I have the same kind of, like, palate and thought process when it comes to food. I did that same exact thing, like,
oh
4 years ago, except
are
with kabocha.
Okay, you and I
went,
that's
I went
crazy.
One step more pretentious. I was like, oh, he's Japanese pumpkin.
Did you spray it in front of everyone? Like,
except it was such a small blowtorch and it was almost out that it, like, didn't. I was like, I'll bang this out in 90 seconds. I was going to go, wow, Josh, that's awesome. And instead I was there for 5 minutes, like, hey, guys, it's almost ready. That said, the sweet potatoes and marshmallow thing, it almost reminds me of, like, a Japanese dessert. Yeah. Like, I've had like an Okinawan sweet potato just like poached in ginger syrup.
I have, right? Actually.
And yeah. It's like very like simplistic, you know, taking the sweetness of nature and extracting it and then put through the American lens. It's like, well, we put this in a can and then put the s'mores thing on it and then lit it on fire. And so I love it for that reason. Vegetables for dessert.
Okay. At @imperator_rice. I know you get a lot of peanut butter opinions. Oh, I should have read this before. But I put lao gan ma in my PB and honey sandwiches and black pepper in my PB&Js. The little kick of heat it gives really helps to balance out how sweet everything else is. I agree with this. I put a little bit of salt on my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Dude, lao gan ma. It's lao gan ma's
lao gan ma's good.
A freaking moment. For everyone that doesn't know, it's a, I believe it's Sichuan, but it's a chili crisp.
It's chili crisp.
Chili crisp condiment, like hot oil. Mike Chen put it on his ice cream when he and I did that first We Feast show together. I just saw a shout out to Esther Shang, who just put it on ice cream on my Twitter feed that I was salivating all over. Yeah, lao gan ma is fantastic. Order some on Amazon if you can't find it at your local supermarket. It will blow your freaking mind. Trevor, how do you feel about lao gan ma?
I've actually never had lao gan ma.
I think we have some.
I just got us some.
Oh, you just cool. got us? Yes!
I got us some a day ago.
I mean, I'm not against. I've never had a PB&J with any like sort of salty addition or anything like that, but I'm not against it. It sounds like it could be really good. Mm. I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, so throw some lao gan ma on
there.
You
got ice cream in the freezer?
We have Cherry Garcia.
Lao gan ma, Cherry Garcia. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay. At Michelle Lott 18 says, scrambled eggs sprinkled with cinnamon sugar. No.
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 Yep.
No. Yep. I'm just,
no.
Why? Cinnamon is such a good flavor, and you're just ruining it when you're putting it on eggs.
Okay. What's flan? Right? What is creme
custard?
Flan is custard.
It's basically
custard.
Eggs.
It's Ew. Not basic.
Have you ever had like egg particles in your custard?
Oh, that's the worst. If you're getting egg in your flan, then you're cooking your flan wrong, Joshua.
I have actually tried to just make like a sweet omelet. I don't know if I was under the influence of something at the time, but I have done this. Well, if you think about Japanese tamagoyaki, this is another classic Josh stupid yeah. circular logic. There's a lot of sugar in tamagoyaki. It's basically a sweet omelet, right?
Yeah, that's fine, but with the addition the addition of cinnamon? No,
it's just
you.
Cinnamon instead of kombu.
Yeah, ew. Yeah, those two are not interchangeable, man.
At Michelle Lott, I dig your scrambled eggs with cinnamon sugar. Don't listen to Trevor and Nicole. They're haters.
What?
All right, at G.Keaton, Chef Boyardee is the Bob Ross of food. That's accurate in my mind.
Josh is obsessed with Chef Boyardee and thinks that he's the reason why we won the World War.
Ettore Boyardee kept his canning factory open for 24 hours a day, became a national hero, won the Medal of Honor. He probably didn't, but I'm going to say that he did, and he won the war. Take that, fascism. You got beat by ravioli.
I don't have anything to say. That's... I think Josh summed it up pretty well. Thank
you. Okay. Max Rowan Rocks says, canned corn is trash, whereas frozen corn is top shelf. My mom would try to sneak in canned in meals, and I would sniff it out and refuse. To this day, I'm over 40. I still will not eat canned corn. It is not good and should be discontinued. Okay, yeah, you're right. Frozen corn is better than canned corn because they flash freeze it. In an IQF was individually quality frozen. I know that because I used to be an R&D chef. But yeah, I agree with you. Frick canned corn, unless it's esquite, which is delicious.
Yo, I would just eat just straight up corn out of the can with the liquid when I was a kid. And I would still do that.
Gross.
I don't like frozen corn for some reason. I feel like it gets mushier. I respect Nicole and her scientific knowledge. But one thing, he's going after the wrong guy here. He's got the wrong perp. The real perp is peas. Because
peas.
Frozen peas are like, that is literally the way to eat a pea. I remember Iron Chef America had battle frozen peas, and the guy had to go, battle frozen peas! And they explained that like, freezing a pea, flash freezing it like you talked about, is actually a way to preserve it because that's such a short shelf life and there's so much labor involved in taking them out. Mm-hmm. Whereas canned peas are just like pure mush.
Ugh, they're brown.
Ugh. Yeah, they're just like this like brown, kind of tepid little things. But frozen peas are absolutely, that's one of the things that I keep in my freezer at all times.
I when I was young, I refused to eat corn off of the cob. Aww. I literally would not
put it back
like,
on the cob.
Would it like bother you?
Yeah, I just didn't like corn off the cob. Yeah. Like you give me a whole corn cob, I'd munch that thing down to the bone. But I would not if there was like a bowl of just kernels of corn, I could not eat it. So and I still don't like I don't know if I don't like it
refuse
still.
Refuse eat uncobbed corn.
I only eat corn on the cob. So frick 'em both.
Is
in
that
my
because
opinion.
You can use the cob as toilet paper afterwards? You guys didn't know that? That's how like pioneers and stuff would wipe their bum bum. They'd use spent corn cobs. You guys did not know this.
I think Josh just wiped his butt with a corn cob one time, and now he's trying to justify it.
You scrape. You don't insert.
Okay.
Okay.
It's like a credit. You credit card it.
That opinion was like.
Think about it like a debit card. Let's go.
And on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog Is a Sandwich. We got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mythical Chef or @NHendyZada with the hashtag Opinion Casserole.
For more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube, and we launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pics of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at Mythical Kitchen.
We'll see you next time.
Trevor, thank you for stopping by KPCC out of Pasadena City College, an NPR affiliate.
This has been so lovely. Thank you for having me on.
Come on anytime.